To show you.
We're about to get deep in this blue sea.
When they said the title of the movie 10 minutes into it, I was just like, very good. Very good.
Already off to a good start.
Good start, guys.
Oh, yeah. No, fantastic one, honestly. I didn't realize until the honest trailer, like, oh, okay, this is Jurassic Park in the ocean.
It really is, though.
Shoot her!
Shoot her!
Yeah, no, this is very Jurassic Park in the ocean, but you know what? Also not mad. Also not even a little mad.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I love it.
Okay. I saw the video you sent us about the dude's video essay about this movie.
Ryan Hollander.
Apparently, like, people get upset when they call Deep Blue Sea a B movie, and I'm like, all right, I can see why
people get mad at that. It's a fact.
Apparently, it's not exact. It could be a little bit more than just a B movie.
I mean, it had the budget that, like, isn't quite a B movie, but, like, we'll get into it. But this movie isn't good.
No.
No, it's great. You're right. It's not good. It's not great. I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, with that point of contention.
With the contemptuous in your voice, Jesus Christ. I'm on my laptop out right now. No, let's just go. Let's do it.
Well, with that point of contention, let's go ahead and get started, shall we? Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. I am your host, Alex Webster. Joining me, as always, Anthony Fuentes. And Phil Acevedo.
Hello. My head is like a shark fin.
Mm-hmm.
Dear Lord.
Phil, cool Phil. There you go.
Wow. Ooh, that's good. I like that.
Today, in case you haven't picked it up already, welcome. First of all, welcome to Monster May, guys.
Oh, yeah. That's right. We got a theme.
He did the May.
There you go. Okay. We're here. We're excited. We're talking about monsters the entire month of May. We're kicking it off with one of the
most disgusting monsters of all time.
Okay,
I am totally against glamorizing sharks. I know sharks they're getting all this cute love. Oh, they're just misunderstood creatures. They're not misunderstood.
It's a fact.
No, they're disgusting. They're disgusting.
They're assholes is what they are.
Yeah, man, fuck sharks, man. We can live without them.
To be fair, they're not as dickish as orcas. Orcas are pretty bad.
Oh, they'll flip a seal like 200 feet in the air. Have you seen those videos?
Yeah. Orcas play with their food.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, they're a lot cuter,
honestly,
though.
Honestly, most of the ocean animals are assholes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
dolphins. Dolphins are predators. But
or
like,
medicine.
In the weird way.
Mm-hmm.
It's a weird kind of.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, Phil's starting this one off. Go for it.
Yeah, we're talking. Oh. Well, also, we haven't said the name of the movie we're covering. We're covering Deep Blue Sea. Dear God.
It's already getting chaotic. I love it.
It's gonna be fun. It's gonna be a good time.
So, Deep Blue Sea. Should I start?
Yes.
Yeah, we good?
Yeah,
are you done with your you know, patronizing of my anti shark hate over here?
You know what? Give me a soapbox. Give me something to stand on. I will talk about sharks.
No. You'll be wasting your time, your breath, and all of our energy. So how about we don't do that? Instead, let's get into this IMDb synopsis for Deep Blue Sea, shall we?
Oh my God. We are each one of the three sharks in this movie. I can tell right now.
I'm the one
taken out by L. Cool J.
I'm the one that takes out Samuel. Because I'm that cool. Yeah. So, I got the balls to do it. I'm joking.
You're like,
anyways,
someone else is monologuing.
Replace Samuel with Webster.
We're gonna finish this podcast.
We're gonna
that shark attacking Webster is just a symbolism of my cringe jokes bringing her down and into the deep water.
So true. Into the deep blue sea.
Into the deep blue sea. All right. Can we finally do this? All right.
Let's go.
You're the one who stalled it.
I could keep going, but business first. Let's get to it. All right. IMDb synopsis goes, searching for a cure to Alzheimer's disease. I said that really weird. No, Alzheimer's disease.
Alzheimer's.
A group. God damn it. A group of scientists on an isolated research facility become the prey as a trio of intelligent sharks fight back. Okay. I would give that a 7.2 on the IMDb synopsis scale of how good that was well written. You know what? That's too high. Let's go 6.2.
6.2. There you go. Yeah. I'm with it.
Yeah, I'll give it like a solid 5. There's two commas, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. We, you know what? I think we should start rating our IMDb synopsis now. at a 10 on quality.
Quality.
Anyways.
As a trio, intelligent sharks fight back is what elevates it.
There you go. Yeah. There you go. You know, with the AI renaissance that's going on right now, yeah. If I were you, IMDb, right now would not be a bad idea to hire ChatGPT to write your Alzheimer's. Or, I mean, your...
It's free. Are you having Alzheimer's right now?
I'm having Alzheimer's right now as we speak.
Oh, fuck.
Oh, man. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. But then again, ChatGPT could be the beginning of the end of for humanity. But anyways, this movie was written by Duncan Kennedy, Donna Powers, and Wayne Powers. And it's directed by Rennie Harlan.
Okay, now what if they programmed a ChatGPT-level AI into these sharks?
And they were AI sharks?
AI sharks?
Give it like 5 years. 5 years and we're going to have AI-powered sharks in movies. Not in real life. Yeah. That's silly. Okay.
No, it's not. Imagine?
Can you imagine when Sammy J is given that monologue right before, but instead of the shark jumping in to snatch Samuel Jackson, he jumps in, he just stops right there in front of everybody and, you know, makes a big splash entrance and he starts talking. Hey, Sammy J, that's a really well put monologue, but might I suggest if you throw this sentence right here, exchange it with a predicate, you got yourself a good subject, here you go. And he walks away and he just, you know, corrected his entire monologue with well-formulated AI grammar.
And he's so distraught, he fucking just jumps into the ocean. He just kills himself.
Boom.
No, then he realized that the AI actually sourced it from Bill Pullman's Independence Day speech.
And that's exactly what I was thinking, too.
Oh, all right. I gotta say, I know there's a Deep Blue Sea 2, but, you know, if there isn't
there's
a part 3...
There's
what?
Three.
What? Oh, there's shit.
Three. Part 3 came out in, like, 2020.
No way. I had no idea about this. Okay. I was going to say, there is not a part 3, we should pitch part 3 with AI, you know, powered sharks, but whatever.
Part 4.
Anyways, Deep Blue Sea stars Saffron Burrows, Thomas Jane, LL Cool J, Mama Said Knock You Out, Jacqueline McKenzie, Michael Rapaport, Stellan Skarsgård, and good ol' the icon, the GOAT. Some call him Mace. Some call him, you know, the snake on a plane guy. But I just like to call him Samuel L. Jackson. Anyways, let's get some box office info. Budget for this bad boy. Deep Blue Sea comes in, weighing in at $60 million for the budget. The release date was July 28th, 1999. And it made $164.6 million smackaroos.
You having a hard time reading today, Phil?
A little bit, yeah. It's been a long day. It's been a long day.
Dude, he's got his throat problems. He's fucking losing his memory here.
He needs that throat coat.
He needs the throat coat. Been watching some throat goat late night, dude. Get some sleep.
I was just going to say a throat goat joke.
That's why I put emphasis on the coat. To set it up for a goat joke.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. As long as it's powered by AI, we should be good. Do you guys remember watching this when it came out? Or
I saw this in theaters. Mm-hmm. I absolutely saw this in theaters.
Yeah, I was too young.
You saw it, Webster?
No, I was too young.
Oh, you just barely... Didn't you just recently seen this? Or no?
I literally watched it today for the first time.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah.
Mere minutes ago.
Mere an hour ago.
Nice. I didn't see it in theaters, but I do remember renting this on VHS, I think, when we saw it. Yeah, DVD wasn't out yet. I don't think so.
No, not in 1999.
No, oh, it was a great theater experience. I will say that for sure.
That's cool.
Yeah. Okay.
What a great time for this movie to come out too. It came out around the same time as like
everything else.
1999
was a major year.
Yeah. No,
that's like a big actual like academic point for this movie. Surprisingly.
Okay. Okay.
Oh, are we going to talk about it later?
Oh, definitely part of the whole release era of this film. It's very emblematic of it.
Oh, okay.
That was a big year for cinema. Big time.
Oh,
big
one. Oh, yeah. Blair Witch Project came out.
Yeah, The Matrix. But speaking of The Matrix, my brother picked up a copy of The Matrix on VHS for me. He was at an antique store. He's like, hey, do you want this? And I'm like, yeah, 75 cents. He's like, Venmo me 75 cents. I'm like, are you fucking serious? He's like, no, but I got the movie. I'm like, thank you.
Venmo me 75 cents.
No matter how much an older brother loves his younger brother, he will always do the dumbest impression. Like, and then he said, oh, this is a burner.
Yep. That's very on point. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right.
Well, let's learn a little bit about the inspirations for this fucking masterpiece, shall we?
Are we talking about different movies?
We're just talking about The Matrix right now. Oh, God.
Anyways, as a child in Queens, in Australia, future screenwriter Duncan Kennedy experienced a unique but tragic moment in his childhood that left him with the pretty bitch and recurring nightmare. So, there was a... beach near his home where he would walk frequently. And one day, his walk coincided with a nearby shark attack. He didn't see the attack all the way, but he definitely saw the results. So the body of the victim washed up right next to him. And he witnessed the full potential of what a shark can do to the human body. Reflecting on this, he said, quote, there was really not much left of him.
Wow.
So, this left its mark on little Duncan over here, and he soon developed a recurring nightmare where he was trapped in a passageway being stalked by sharks that could read his mind.
So this movie?
Yeah.
So this movie.
That's how this movie's so claustrophobic. I'm like, damn, these sharks have no room to swim, but they are swimming, baby. Eventually, the dreams became so intense that he actually channeled all those fears into a screenplay, which weirdly gained a lot of traction. So, at this point, shark movies were not doing well in the box office. Jaws may technically be the first blockbuster, but in the years since, most movies in the genre floundered. They floundered, yeah. So
floundered.
That's a good sentence, huh? So,
I would strangle you right now if you were here physically in person.
I realize this is because I know we're doing remote. I put more puns. That's how it works.
Oh, Little Mermaid. Oh. Wow, I'm just getting that right now.
Phil, you need to drink more coffee. I know you're trying to cut back. But
yeah, no,
I need you at peak performance.
No,
here.
honestly, I'm
this
trying.
This is a job, Phil.
But I literally have only seen The Little Mermaid once in my life, and that was probably when I was like six. And then I was like, wait, where's Flounder from? Oh, it's a Disney movie. Wait, which one? What, the one with, he's a fish. Oh, yeah, Little Mermaid. Oh, that's a Little Mermaid pun. Okay, I've only seen the movie once in my life. I have zero excitement for this live action, probably because I just don't have any attachment to the original one, so
I'm going to withhold my opinions because it is not that kind of podcast. Moving on.
The way Phil reasoned, that was like a cold, a virus, a computer virus.
Gotta give it a cold.
Dad, you're a genius.
Jesus Christ. Okay, every subsequent Jaws sequel did worse than the original. And of course, the early knockoffs were produced in Mexico because they had more access to real sharks and could knock out a poster that looked very close to the original Jaws. That's how they sold these movies. Wow. And all these real sharks were used for B-roll in these films. It was fucking hilarious. So, yeah. The Italian film Great White only screened for 1 month before it was legally proven to be the exact same movie as Jaws. Finally, Night of the Sharks followed a gang who pulled off the perfect crime of bugging the President of the United States, which eventually turns into a showdown with a trained great white named Cyclops.
Wow, I have to see this movie.
Yeah, I'm surprised they didn't just call it Watergate.
Like, Watergate?
That's good.
Are you proud of
yourself? Come on.
Oh, man.
Dude, how late did you stay up last night thinking of that one?
I literally just thought about it right now.
No, you didn't. Like, I don't believe you.
Because I had to say it out loud. I was like, wait a second. Bug the president's office.
Water.
Anyways.
Night of the Sharks. This movie looks...
Oh, okay. All right, I'm looking this up as well. Night of the Sharks?
Okay, I just texted you guys the cover of the movie.
Oh my god, hold on, where is
Dude, this? Is it literally not Jaws?
Oh, it very well could be, but no, it's just like a guy, like, with, like, diamonds coming out of his hands.
What the hell? That's glorious.
Dude.
The tagline... So the poster for Night of the Sharks, the tagline reads, "Still waters run deep, dark and deadly."
That's incredible.
Yeah. Thank you. I hope, God.
If that sounds more dramatic, listeners, is because it took us three times because Phil's internet kept cutting out.
That's so weird.
During the dark and deadly part.
That's funny. This movie did not want me to read the tagline.
No,
dude. People gotta know about this movie now, though. That is definitely Monster May year fucking version
12
or whatever. Yeah, whenever that happened.
Oh.
Of course, by the late 90s, sharks were in dire need of a cinematic rebrand. And I couldn't think of a pun there, but I'm sure there's something in there.
They needed a bit of a refresh for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They need to rehydrate.
Great. Really? Stop it. Stop it.
Still got it.
Stop it.
Look at you.
I'd spritz you with a water bottle if I could.
You say this often.
Stop
I know.
Stop it. Stop. Anyway, we have Rennie to the rescue.
Oh, look at you.
Kennedy.
Harlan.
Huh?
I said it's Rennie Harlan. People know.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, Kennedy sold his spec script to Warner Brothers in 1994, where it sat on a shelf before going through many, many, many rewrites.
Lots of rewrites.
Yeah, that's what happens when you write down a dream and basically say, hey, let's make this a movie, please.
Yeah.
The anger in your voice, like, this fucking guy wrote down a dream, please.
I'm so mad. I am bubbling with anger.
I mean, awesome. Only one guy can pull it off, and that's my boy David.
You're right.
The rage inside of me knows no limits. Anyway, co-writers Donna and Wayne Powers were the last to work on the script and had completely changed the film by the time they turned the final draft in. According to Wayne, quote, "The movie became essentially what we wrote. The draft we were first presented by Warner Brothers was more of a military espionage, high-tech action movie, grenade launchers, that kind of thing. We wanted our team to include more blue-collar types and to not have weapons to fight back, to play it more as a horror film," unquote.
Mm.
I feel like the first version can also, like, legally be a ripoff of Night of the Shark, probably.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. They for sure watched that movie and were like, what if we just did that?
It sounds like Aliens, the sequel to Alien.
Mm-mm.
Like, with all these, like, you know, but without, like, Marines, I guess.
Without the Space Marines?
Yeah.
Without the fun.
Replace the Space Marines with, like, you know, these, what are they called? These blue-collar types.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So it was around this time that notable director Rennie Harlan was experiencing the highs and subsequent lows of his career. The director had a string of hits from the late 80s to early 90s, including Nightmare on Elm Street 4, The Dream Master, Die Hard 2, and Cliffhanger. Unfortunately, he ran into a little bit of trouble after 1993's Cliffhanger. Immediately after his very profitable film starring Sylvester Stallone, he directed the Guinness World Records biggest box office flop of all time, Cutthroat Island.
Wow.
Ooh, if you read about this film, dude, this is a Cliff Notes version right here, but trust me. Ooh.
Okay.
Cutthroat Island.
Goatthroat Island, dude.
Oh my god.
Oh man, I hate how good that was.
That was good.
I just had my coffee. I'm golden, baby. Let's fucking go.
I can tell. It's good. Man. You're on a roll right now, Flinster.
Thank you.
Damn. Anyway, Cutthroat Island.
Keep going, Wesker. No,
I can't. It's so funny. It starred his wife at the time, Gina Davis, and lost a reported $147 million.
And then that's not adjusted for inflation either. That's much worse now. It's much worse.
The pirate theme film was such a failure that it bankrupted Carolco Pictures and tarnished the pirate genre forever. Just kidding. It tarnished the pirate genre until 2003's Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Pearl came out. A little known film, independent, really not well known.
No, yeah, definitely. And then we weren't stuck with pirate films for the next, like, long
decade. After this, of course, he followed it up with the Samuel L. Jackson film, A Long Kiss Goodnight, which wasn't a hit either. despite his late 80s and early 90s output, these two back-to-back failures made Harlan nervous about his next big picture. Still, he wanted to bring the horror genre back to the high-budget glory, lamenting how lower-budget slashers had moved the genre away from movies like Jaws, The Exorcist, and, of course, previously mentioned Alien.
I lost my train of thought, but I think I'm just going to go into the next title right here. Mm-hmm. Big Budget Bites.
Ooh.
Yeah, with a... I like that title. Good title right there, Fwen. Here we go. All right. With a reported budget of $60 million, probably closer to $80 million, Deep Blue Sea was going to have a lot to work with in terms of special effects and star power. Good old star power, baby. Samuel Jackson was originally offered the role of Sherman, quote, Preacher, which I always thought was a really cool middle name or nickname by LL. Yeah, but his management team didn't like the idea of him playing a chef for some reason. So they created the character of Russell Franklin specifically for him. He very much enjoyed playing the richest man in the world.
That's a big gap from chef to, like, yeah. Bill Gates.
Right?
Also, yeah. I feel like it's like, don't you want him to be in the movie longer? But neither here nor there.
They probably couldn't, very true, very true. So the character of Sherman Preacher Dudley was then given to none other than LL Cool J. And Harlan had to fight the studio to get him into the film. Ron Burgundy?
Ron Burgundy?
And once he was cast, Harlan liked him so much that they rewrote the script so that LL Cool J's character survived in the end rather than get killed early on, which I thought was a really cool choice. Harlan wanted to do the opposite of Jaws and showcase the sharks as much as possible. The team did this by filming real sharks to mix with CGI and animatronics. Thomas Jane's character would spend the most time among the creatures, so they literally threw him into the deep end to get the footage they needed. Dude, those animatronic sharks are scary as fuck, dude.
They are very scary.
Are they?
Yeah, they're scary.
Do they scare you?
Yeah, dude. There's this wide shot of Thomas Jane, like, just standing there. I think it's the image that you use today, Fwen, in today's artwork.
Oh, yeah.
That fucking shot is terrifying. That is something where nightmares are born, for sure.
Dude, well, everything Thomas Jane does in this movie is terrifying.
Yeah. Yeah. So, on his first experience working with live sharks, he states, "The first day I was in a cage, but the next day they swam me 30 feet down. Then this guy yanks the breather off me and the water's churning with blood and guts and stuff. It was so terrifying that I don't want to remember it." And that was my Thomas Jane impression.
Just a guy.
I'm just a guy. To differentiate themselves from Jaws, instead of having one shark, the team would have three. And rather than it being a 25-footer like Bruce, these Mako sharks would be 26 feet.
Ooh,
whopping 26. They made a whole 1 foot
difference.
Bigger.
And three of them.
Ooh. Three of them.
And they got bigger brains.
And they got them big brains.
And they could swim backwards.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. So 3 tons of water were accidentally dumped on the cast in the scene where they attempted to return to the elevator after hooking up Stellan Skarsgård to the helicopter. Seeing as they weren't wearing safety harnesses, the actors were being pushed across the set, but managed to stay in character. This version of the scene was kept in the final film. That is irresponsible.
That is just straight up not good.
Like, did we dump 3 tons of freaking water on our cast right now and almost kill them? Like, yeah, but they're swimming pretty good.
Yeah.
Where's Safran... the safety coordinator?
Yes, thank you.
Probably
holding
the goddamn latch for the thing. Like, oh shit.
he went to go get coffee and he was just like, what? I fucking missed God. It.
The whole crew was like, man, you gotta get back on coffee, dude. You've been sleeping these whole nights.
Oh my God. So anyways, Safran Burrow's character was originally supposed to survive her ordeal with a shark, but test audiences hated her so much that the scene was reshot to include her death. I hope everything's okay over there with whatever just fell.
Yeah, my cat's an asshole.
Apparently, test audiences saw her as the villain, seeing as she was responsible for the shark situation in the first place. So they just reshot the ending in one day.
Good choice. I kept waiting for this bitch to die.
Yeah, she was like that self-centered. She kind of was the villain of this movie.
She was the villain of the movie, but then also like all these good people like kept dying, and she was just like, my research. I gotta get my research.
Yeah, she was very self-centered,
and it just. She wasn't a good character, and no, I was rooting for her inevitable demise, and I'm very glad that it did happen, because if we made it through the whole movie and she made it to the end, I was going to be mad.
Yeah.
Dude, there's a still that exists out there of her having the kissing end scene with Thomas
Jane. Oh, fuck no.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh.
The power of test audiences.
We love we love it when people listen to their test audiences.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time.
Yeah.
When they do.
At the end, you had the two dudes survive because dudes rock. So.
I was going to say, and then they kissed.
and then Thomas Jane and LL Cool J made out in the sunset. Oh, that's so funny. The Safran Burrows, is she the, was she in Gladiator? Was she Joaquin Phoenix's sister / lover?
Was that her?
I think so. Is that her?
Jamie, can you pull that up? Hold on.
I'm not sure. I gotta, yeah.
I think she played Wonder Woman's mom, too, in Wonder Woman. In Justice League.
She was in Troy.
Oh, okay. She was in Troy. Okay. I don't know. She just looks a lot like homegirl from Gladiator.
Close enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways, this was the most difficult film to shoot in all of Rennie Harlan's career. But was it worth it? It certainly did better than Cutthroat Island, though.
That's a good delivery right there.
So, Anthony, please, talk to me a little bit about your hat.
Oh, yeah. It's a little bit like a shark's fin. Anyways.
Tell us about your hat, Anthony.
It was somewhat of an alley-oop.
Jesus Christ. So, reviewers were actually very mixed upon first viewing Deep Blue Sea. Rotten Tomatoes critical consensus reads, Deep Blue Sea is no Jaws, but action fans seeking some toothy action can certainly do, and most certainly have done, far worse for B-movie thrills.
Wow.
The toothy action. See that? Anyways, so among the haters was the New York Times calling the film, quote, a cut-rate Titanic stripped of romance and historical resonance infused with Jaws, shorn of mythic symbolism and without complex characters. Okay, you were definitely
okay, that's a little
not
aggressive.
Understanding the premise.
What? Yeah.
Super genius sharks, baby. Nah. What historical resonance are you going to get with that?
I know. Also, Titanic-like? I don't know about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the only way that they could get Titanic, because it reminded me of Titanic, but it's in no way is it like, was I like, these are the same movie, was when LL Cool J is walking down the hallway and it's like half, like flooded to his chest. And I'm like, oh, this looks like the scene in Titanic when like DiCaprio and Kate Winslet are like walking down the hallway and it is also flooded to their chest. Like,
I love that you said that, because fact I did not include is they use the same set as Titanic, the same tank and everything they built on it.
Fuck you guys. Hell yeah.
Good call, Webster. Look at you being observant over there. Hell yeah.
Look at you.
It was the same fat fucking tank, and they built the set around it in the same manner as Titanic. So there you go.
Wow.
Yeah. She got good instincts. Look at her.
So, I can be observant.
Yeah.
To be fair, I wasn't always observant during this movie because it's a little silly, but I did pick that up.
It's a very serious movie, Alex, please.
No, it's not.
Anyways,
fucking bite me. You can bite me.
There's your pun. There you go. Yep.
Oh, wow. And that didn't take me 5 minutes to catch. That was like instantly.
That was not instantly. That was delayed.
Okay, maybe a little delayed.
30 seconds. It's fine. Yeah. So,
but not like Flounder. Oh, Little Mermaid.
That's true. That was bad.
Oh, however, in terms of positive reviews, we actually have two podcast staples here. First, being our boy, Roger Ebert, who says, quote, in a genre where a lot of movies are retreads of the predictable, Deep Blue Sea keeps you guessing.
I cannot believe Roger Ebert liked this movie.
He did. He actually really liked this movie. He gave it 3 stars.
Roger Ebert.
Yeah. Second, of course, is one of our other boys, Owen Gleiberman!
Fucking Gleiberman.
Who called the film, quote, an entertainingly trashy and derivative carnivore spectacular! Exclamation point.
Entertainingly trashy is the title of my autobiography.
I love it. I love that.
Anyway, so Deep Blue Sea opened in third place to just over $19 million behind Runaway Bride and The Blair Witch Project. Yes, it was a solid opening, but wasn't enough to get its budget back. At first. Turns out, Deep Blue Sea would have surprisingly long legs for a movie around a creature with fins.
It would
very small drops week after week and ultimately make over $165 million worldwide. It was compared to films like The Mummy, which had a large medium budget and managed to eventually become very profitable. So, it was also released at the time when a VHS would experience its last time in the spotlight at Blockbusters across America, but was also one of the earlier examples of a very successful DVD when the format was just starting to make waves.
Nice. Make waves.
Stop it, dude.
Alex, come on. God. Come on.
All right, let's look beyond surface level here, guys.
Wow. And you went for it? That talks about alley-oops.
Ooh.
Damn. All right. Deep Blue Sea may have survived the 1999 box office, but did its legacy sink over the past two decades or rise to the top?
Wow.
Thankfully, we've got Letterboxd to figure that one out.
Yay.
You can tell I had a lot of fun with this, right? This is fun.
And Alex, might I just point out, you're being a real trooper right now, and I appreciate it.
I
think
do.
We all appreciate it.
I do what I can. Deep Blue Sea has a 2.8 rating out of 6,300 reviews, which is surprisingly low for its legacy. But still, it's got its fans. Or could you say fins?
That's exactly what I was going to do. God damn it.
Look at you, Webster. It wasn't even on the script, and you added more fuel to the fire. I love it.
Gotcha.
I was saving that one in the bank, and you just took it right there.
I just took it from you.
You just did. We have the same mind sometimes. You know that, right?
I do. Yeah. I do.
I saw it firsthand.
Anyway, moving on. Matt Lynch gives it 3.5 stars, saying, quote, little known fact, this is the motion picture that finally spurred Hollywood Foreign Press Association to create the Golden Globe Award for the best use of Stellan Skarsgård as an underwater projectile. It also, unsurprisingly, is the award's first winner, unquote.
Wow. Wow.
Do you know how hard I had to try to read that deadpan?
Yeah. No pauses at all. Very good job.
Yeah, oh,
good
man, job. That's fucking funny. User Dirty Laundry gives the film 4.5 stars, saying, quote, sharks below, fire above, this is cinema. God damn it.
It's true.
User acid_26 gives it 2 stars, lamenting, quote, not the pear it, justice for Coco.
Yeah.
With a lot of emoji usage.
Yeah, I support that.
Yeah, absolutely. Justice for the bird.
Mm-hmm.
Jack Boole gives it 4 stars, saying, quote, Einstein's theory of relativity. Grab hold of a hot pan. Second can seem like an hour. Watch Deep Blue Sea. An hour can seem like a second. It's all relative.
Oh, I love Cool J.
Oh, man. Mm-hmm. And finally, 24 Frames of Nick gives it a whopping 5 whole stars, saying, quote, better than Jaws. Fuck Jaws.
Okay. First of all, with your up your ass name, 24 Frames of Nick. All right. Oh, hey, I wonder what that's a reference to. Shut up, dude. Better than Jaws. Stop it, man. Stop trying to be different.
All right. Very good. Thanks.
Yeah, that's just me.
Listen, I'm not 24 Frames of Nick on Letterboxd.
Or hey, 24 Frames of Nick, if you're listening, I am currently flipping off your name right now in the script. There you go.
I believe that.
Signing up for an account on Letterboxd called 24 Frames of Phil. So you know.
Oh,
it
God.
Sounds better when said out loud.
Thank you.
Anyway. Rennie Harlan would continue to do genre films for the remainder of his career, but none were as impactful as his earlier work. Deep Blue Sea remains one of his career highs, but the man hasn't stopped working and will be helping, actually, with the latest entry of the Strangers franchise, which will be releasing later this year in 2023.
Cool.
Which I'm glad he's trying his hand at horror again. I don't think he quite succeeded with Deep Blue Sea, but that is all right.
Yeah, he's had a handful since, but they weren't, like, big stuff.
Mm-hmm. Deep Blue Sea enjoys a pretty prestigious legacy for a movie with a cursing parrot. By many accounts, it's been labeled as the best non-Jaws shark movie of all time and regularly ranks high on best of lists for the genre, as well as among other creature features. Even its two direct-to-video low-rated sequels can't hamper its legacy, and we're not going to cover those. So for now, let's dive a little deeper into this one.
Yeah, she did the last pun.
I know.
She said it.
That was good. She said that thing.
She said it. Yay!
Okay, I definitely may have went overboard with the pun too, but it's fine.
Overboard? So,
you just did it again. You just did it again!
Oh, you fuck!
Wow! You fuck. Just when you thought the Fwenser was finished.
Oh.
Oh, man.
Oh, what a fun time.
It sounds like you're gonna start crying. Oh, my God.
Zing! So, thoughts on Deep Blue Sea, everybody? Whoever wants to go first.
I need to emotionally recover from that.
Yeah. Who said it? It's the second best shark movie behind Jaws. I think I agree with that. Yeah, I'm with that. Yeah, I dig it. I dig this movie. It's been a while since I've had a rewatch, but yeah, dude, it's definitely, it's just a dumb fun shark movie with some. There's some parts where I was like, okay, that's kind of creepy. Like that shot that I mentioned earlier, that wide with the freaking animatronics, the animation, dude, like there's this scene where I think one of the sharks has LL Cool J in its mouth, and it's obviously an animatronic, but do you know how like scared I would be to just jump into the mouth of that fake shark?
Yes.
And have him ride me in the fucking water like that? Like that's kind of scary.
Ride you in the water, huh?
Scary shit, yeah.
Get your mind out of the freaking gutter, Webster.
Like, you know how excited I would be to jump into the water?
Jesus Christ. But yeah, no, that's terrifying. That the animatronics are scary as fuck. The one that ripped off Stellan Skarsgård's arms off was pretty scary.
Oh my God, yes.
Dude, okay, so thank you for bringing that up. Because when I was watching that, I was like, oh wow, Stellan Skarsgård's gonna die like right away. And then he gets like airlifted to safety. And I was just like, oh, so they're just gonna write him out really early in the movie. And then he gets used as a projectile to freaking crack a glass window. It was crazy.
Dude had the worst death in the entire movie.
And he was alive for the whole thing, just for his wife to sit there, scream, and watch the whole thing.
Oh, yeah. It's a fun movie.
That scene is very, very similar to the scene in, I believe, Jaws 3D, when they're all inside like a glass hub and they see something approaching from the distance in the water. It's like, what is that thing? And it's like the worst like computer animated anything. It's just like a still shark going towards the glass, and it breaks through the glass, and it's just like, but they did it better than Deep Blue Sea. But
technology had moved a little bit forward. Yeah, Jaws 3 at that point. Yeah, that makes sense.
Exactly. And even, this one had a Stellan Skarsgård in it. So,
yeah. Well, also like the special effects for this one made it really hard to like.
Yeah.
It suspended my disbelief quite a bit, or made it hard to suspend my disbelief.
Yeah, the CGI was pretty, especially on the CGI on Samuel L. Jackson when he's getting dragged into the water.
He gets thrown around like a goddamn rag doll.
Oh my God. He just looks like a rubber doll, like in a shark's mouth.
Jesus.
Yeah, it's pretty bad, but the animatronics is scary. The stuff in the kitchen, there's a very terrifying shot of like a fin just rising and just swimming in like the hallway. I always thought, every time I think of Deep Blue Sea, I always think of that shot. Well, that and the wide animatronic shot that I mentioned earlier. But the one indoors, that's like the scariest shit ever. I'll be honest with you guys. Sharks can go to hell. Yes. Okay. But I have this weird thing with sharks. To this day, I'm willing to admit it here on the podcast right now. What episode is this? What matters?
19.
Okay, here in the year of our Lord 2023, I'm about to admit this right now, here and there. I've always had like this scary. I'm a big scary cat for sharks, right? Ever since I was a kid, I'd go swimming in a pool, and I sometimes would be scared to go into a pool. Because I have this unconventional fear that there's a shark in a man-made pool, right? Makes no sense, right? To this day, I still kind of have that thing, too. Like, if I'm in a pool, I open my eyes and I see nothing but blue. I just picture there's a fucking shark swimming its ugly ass way towards me.
Oh, so you have, like, a straight-up, like, phobia of sharks.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. So it's really tough watching these movies, but I'll still watch them, you know. It's just I get grossed out when I just see a shark, you know. The scene where there's like an animatronic shark above water and they're injecting it with the serum they're taking out the shark brain juices, right? They're doing some science shit to the fucking shark, right? I was like, that's a very convincing looking shark, and it's disgusting and it's gross, and like somebody, I think it's Samuel Jackson, he taps it on its back, like it's like, oh, good boy, like, dude, clean your fucking hands, that's just gross, man.
But Thomas Jane's the one holding it, like,
you know, oh, there you go, it's like, Thomas like, Jane, that's right, Thomas Jane.
I'm blaming your dad for pretending to toss you into a shark tank for this.
Yes, that's the origins of the phobia. Yes, absolutely. But yeah,
we're
unlocking
a lot here for Phil.
Yes.
This is what therapy's for, buddy.
Yeah. it's a podcast, not a therapy, so let's just keep going. But yeah, no, this movie was cool. It's fun. It's fun. It's fun as hell. A masterpiece, like some people would mentioned earlier. I don't know. But it's cool. It's a cool movie. It's a cool one.
No, makes sense. What about you, first timer over there, huh?
So I think I'm unfortunately not blinded by nostalgia goggles, unlike someone.
No, you're just blind. You're just regular blind.
Oh my God.
No, this movie isn't good, guys. Like it's fun, but I didn't even get like it's bad fun, like because there wasn't like.
That's the way I look at it.
Enough humor out of I didn't like. I don't know. I couldn't figure out what it decided it wanted, like what it was trying to be. I don't know. I had a rough time with it. I did. Like
my heart is sinking.
Wow! Could you please stop?
Sorry. Keep going.
I will say, so we watched the Ryan Hollinger video about this movie before we recorded. And Ryan Hollinger brought up a point where he was like talking about how like, sorry, my cat's trying to fight everything right now. About how shark movies, like, how everyone gets mad because sharks, like, gets defensive about how sharks aren't really evil and blah, 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 blah. Like, all that. And he brought up this point that I wanted to address because it kind of, like, I was just like, Ryan, normally you make some very good, very well thought out, very nuanced takes. This was not a good nuanced take. Because because he was just, like, saying, like, suspension of disbelief is required for monster movies so people can, like... find them scary, right? Like, that's what they do for shark movies, what they do for tarantula movies, what they do for any, like, small creature turned to larger creature type shit, right?
Yes.
In the famous words of Ryan Hollander, however...
that was a good one.
The social... stigma against sharks is, like, a very palpable, very real one with, like, actual consequences, where sharks, like, people, like, are okay with sharks being hunted to the point of extinction, because everyone thinks sharks are evil and trying to kill everyone, which is, like, it's their home. People go into the ocean and expect, like, everything to be okay, but it's, like, it's their home. They live there. How would you feel if someone just walked into your house and chilled there?
I mean, you live in Los Angeles. It's a very real possibility of that happening.
Listen, you fucks. I feel so passionate about sharks. I love sharks so much.
You know, the sad part is that they don't care about you, Webster.
That's
what makes them disgusting.
Are you saying I'm in a toxic relationship with sharks?
They are so self-centered.
No. I love sharks, and that aside, I can put all of that aside to watch a shark movie. I love Jaws. Mm-hmm. I'm not a monster. I'm not that guy on Letterboxd who was like, fuck Jaws. no, but this was like, it was a watchable movie. Like, I would rewatch it. I think I would have a lot more fun watching it with friends, and I think I'd have a lot more fun watching it, like, fucked up.
Yes, this is exactly one of those movies, and I agree, I would like to organize that at some point in the summer.
Deep Blue Sea Zerk?
Deep Blue Sea Zerk, yep. That'd be the time, baby.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah. I'm a bitch for nostalgia, so right away, I love this movie. I saw it in theaters. This is another one of them family movies. So I remember the theater experience was tense. Like, people were... 90s audiences bought this bitch. Like, they bought every second of this movie. The funnest and most scary part, as a child, like a 12-year-old, but, you know, preteen, whatever, we're all in the movie theater, and it is Samuel Jackson's speech, because it was a very riveting speech. We were all on the edges of our seat. The collective gasp in the theater is still something to this day I remember. It was fucking awesome. But, yeah, this movie does hopeless good. Like, it's of an era of just, like, man, they are not getting out of this shit. What's going on? Like, but it's also one of those dumb things where they're just like, oh, wow, yeah, we got no problems. Or we got no solution here. Oh, by the way, there's a secret hatch that we should have been just gone straight to. that's every time somebody dies and is like, oh yeah, fuck, that fucked up. I guess we got to use the second hatch we didn't want to use. Then we get a little higher to the thing. But that's just the nature of these deeply B-movie movies right
here. Yeah.
Like, this is B as can be. But I'm with it. I have watched this movie frequently over the years. It's honestly been like maybe 5 years since I've seen it, but you know, I watched it. I was hanging out with somebody who watched it, and again, Samuel Jackson's death really freaked him the fuck out. It was great. And then, I don't know. Again, the scientist girl dying, fantastic. She did not need to live.
It was so cathartic. Like, I wish she had died earlier, but I guess they were just like, we're building up to it, but like, goddamn.
Well, that, like, she's just not a character that has anything good going for her.
Mm-mm.
Like, she's not funny. She's not really, she's, you know, dumb for a scientist, to be honest with you. Like,
she's not likable no at all.
Yeah, there's nothing redeeming about her, so that she gets fucking murked after saving the day. Like, you know, her grabbing the little thing in the cement and then it falling down on her, I'm not sure if I remember this correctly, there could have been some clapping. There could have been some clapping. Because she sucked. But other than that, you know, it's just, to me, it's just a fun, this is the definition of a dumb fun, and what a monster movie really should be when it has nothing else to say.
There's other those than profound, just like, ah, yeah. Monster.
Yeah, ah, monster, ah, real monsters. Yes,
oh my god.
I was thinking that, but I wasn't going to say it. God damn it.
You're just, again, same mind.
Same brain.
Yep. So, yeah, I don't know. To me, again, there's smart monster movies that have a lot going on. You know, something from Bong Joon-ho, good old classic Godzilla, Spielberg's Jaws. Mm-hmm. And then there's these movies, which to me, I love them both equally. So, and I love this one quite a bit. My thoughts, yes. So, however, this movie did come out at a very, very special time of good old 1999. Came out around the same time as films like, of course, The Mummy and Armageddon, which are known to add horror or sci-fi elements to straight action films. Mm-hmm. What would you say makes these films distinct for this particular era, and how are they emblematic of late 90s, pre-9/11 cinema? Like, what's the vibe here?
Ooh, good question.
Very good question.
I will say this movie like could have been made a couple years after because it had that like post 9/11 yellow coloring to it.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of the forebearers for sure. It's like, mm-hmm, this and Bad Boys.
Yeah. Hmm. Damn, very good question here.
But
yeah, what would you say, Webster?
Yeah.
Bring Theory Corner up in this bitch.
Absolutely. No, I love a good opportunity to bring it up. So I think by combining genres or like, you know, horror sci-fi elements with adventure or action, it's a very distinct, like, I think we only really saw that in those eras that like did well because, mm-hmm, of I think 9/11 actually did have a lot to do with it. I think after 9/11 people kind of became disillusioned.
Mm. Yeah, I think this is like a hoorah kind, yeah, of like happiness, mm-hmm, to it.
Yeah, there's like an optimism to them. Like same thing with, you could say the same thing for Independence Day.
Okay. Absolutely, right. I agree with, okay, that. Yeah,
all right.
And Independence Day has a lot of like, it's very like pro America, very American imagery, right? Mm-hmm. And
she has a lot to say about Deep Blue Sea and 90s cinema.
She's got a lot to say.
Mm-hmm.
Are you done?
Just put her in the microphone. Just be like, hey, man, let me tell you something about freaking Deep Blue Sea, all right?
Her hat is like a shark fin.
Oh, my God. Say, hey, that parrot, Coco, rightfully killed.
And I'd do it again. No, but, yeah, I think a lot of those similar movies after 9/11 didn't really get to do... or didn't get to encapsulate like the essence in the right way. Like, I think they're a little bit more blockbustery, mm-hmm, instead of focusing on the genre.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes, mm-hmm, sense.
That would be, mm-hmm, my stab at it.
I think pre 9/11 film audiences were a little less desensitized. I think, yeah, post 9/11,
they could handle like explosions and death and a lot of money.
Yeah, post 9/11, we were a little more on our toes at the time. They were very nervous times. Mm-hmm. I think we were a little more sensitive at the time because we're just like, hey, man, you guys are putting explosions in your movies. We're still kind of, you know, thinking of what the real explosions happened in 9/11 and shit like that. You know, so it's like,
yeah.
Yeah, so I think we were all, it was all fun and games and stuff like that until some real world shit happened like that, you know?
Yeah, and that's a great point because I also feel like, and I, because I wasn't really culturally conscious yet in 2001, but I know people were very, very, very serious and somber about like America based trauma, mm-hmm, and death in cinema, so. I could see something where it's like, oh, we're going to blow up half of Manhattan.
Yeah. They're like, maybe not even a little bit of it, please.
Yeah. Not for a while. Leave Manhattan alone, yeah, please. I would really like that.
But it was always like the late 90s, early 2000s was always fun to see the next sci-fi or horror flick, like, and especially ones that really involved animals. Like, do you guys remember Lake Placid?
I sure do.
Yeah. I never saw it, but I am familiar.
Like, I think it's somewhere. I mean, it's always fun. I think Jurassic Park really did pave the way for a lot of like sci-fi horror films, especially when animals are involved. Because, I mean, just look at this one. This one's lots of major quote unquote influences came from Jurassic Park. You know, so. Yeah, I mean, it was, I was, as a kid, I was always down for the next, like, big scary animal movie, except, you know, not the shark one. I wasn't down to see a shark fucking movie in the big screen.
Like, I will watch Anaconda twice. Yeah. That also has a rap.
Yeah.
Rant. I am fine.
Oh, yeah. Anaconda. That's right. Ice Cube. That's
Ice
right.
Ice Cube, baby.
That's right.
Baby.
That one. All the time, baby. Don't stop, get it. All right, we can keep going. No, Anaconda, I actually do remember seeing in theaters. That was like, what, 97? 98?
Probably
97?
A little earlier.
Yeah, that I do remember seeing in theaters, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one. No, I'm with you guys, though. I think my personal take on this, and again, leading up to the whole 9/11 thing, Jurassic Park made the... It just gave us a technological leap. It was so hard that... I think filmmakers were only able to make these kind of, like, huge action spectacles within, like, the crime genre or cop movies or, like, other genres that didn't require CG or none of that stuff, but they still were able to have, like, a fun time with it. And then once you were able to, like, make movies that you could bring a full-ass genre film with it, they got really creative. They got really creative with it, and they still kept kind of that, like, wink to the camera spirit, I think, despite how devastating damage monsters can do. And then that's why I feel like movies like Armageddon, Independence Day is another one too, obviously, even The Mummy, like, people get murked. The stakes are always really fucking high. Like, it, there's definitely moments of like, damn, this is just hopeless. How the fuck are they going to get around this? I think in the like post 9/11 cinema for sure, that level of dread was given a little bit more seriousness. So you didn't really quite have, the stakes just felt completely different. They felt completely different, and unfortunately, that removed a lot of the fun from the movies. Had to say things more. They had to actually have like an underlying message. Where there's not really the underlying messages and even characters in this movie are very simple. They're very, very simple, right. And I think that's what makes it fun. And I think sometimes we get it nowadays, but they maybe wink too hard. Everybody wants to be, like, very, very self-referential, meta, break the fourth wall. It's nice to have a string of movies that don't care about breaking the fourth wall at all, really, and just want to be movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is definitely one of those before it. Most movies that had this level of dread had to say something with it. So, that, to me, that's what late 90s, pre-9/11, early 2000s movies are all about. And then obviously things change, but you know what? It's fine. We still have the memories of these ones, and maybe, you know, maybe some movies will learn to stop winking so goddamn much and just tell the story despite how dumb the story is. Let's do that. That'd be fun. We need more of those. And with big budgets like this, that'd be fun also.
Yeah, this one did have a big budget. Big budget.
Yeah, pretty big budget, yeah. Damn, we got pretty profound for Deep Blue Sea on that one, didn't we?
Yeah. That's what happens when you write profound questions.
We'll do a couple more of those coming up. But, okay, now to the fun one, because I'm going to skip this next one. This is a fun little game. Okay, you have one rapper, one lead actor, one animal in need of upsizing, and one medical problem to solve. Give me a movie premise and a three-word title that brings all these elements together.
Oh,
go.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Okay. My rapper, DMX, rest in peace. My lead actor. My lead actor. Could it be fictional? Could it be real? You know what? Okay.
It doesn't even have to be somebody famous. It could be anybody, like, really. Like...
Okay, lead actor. Okay, give me a freaking, David Arquette. Boom.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's get back to David Arquette. Fuck yeah.
Yes, there we go. One animal in need of upsizing. You know what, dude? Let's go with some good old tortoises.
Really? All right.
Let's go with a tortoise.
You want to go with tortoises?
Yes, and do not bring up James's tortoise, because I will freaking shut that thing down real quick.
And I didn't.
Until right, he didn't think about it until
one,
right now.
One medical problem to solve. Okay. Let's go with, okay, all right, let's make it fun. Oh my god, when dudes can't get hard, what's it called?
Erectile dysfunction.
Erectile dysfunction, there you go. Mm-hmm. Give me a movie premise and a 3-word title that brings all these elements together. Go. Let's see. Tortoise, erectile dysfunction, DMX, David Arquette. Strange times. So, oh god. Okay, how about this? Go hard now.
Go hard now? Okay, there you go. Go hard now.
Wow.
Super stiff shell. Come on.
Because David Arquette is a scientist, but he needs a good marketing campaign. And the marketing campaign, he's going to get DMX to make a song called, "Hey, go hard right now. Go hard right now. Where my turtles at? Go hard right now." What?
Okay, I like the DMX impression. All right.
Damn.
That was pretty good, Phil. Go hard now.
The tortoises, I don't know where we're going to get the tortoise. They might have something in their blood that helps with the erectile dysfunction.
Yeah.
There.
Sure.
It's just general blood, yes.
There you go.
Would you like to go, Webster?
Yeah, I was going to say, go hard now in theaters, summer 2023. So rapper Megan Thee Stallion, actor okay. Florence Pugh, animal in need of upsizing, panda bears.
Wow,
I like it.
Medical problem to solve: male pattern baldness.
We're going after all the middle aged dudes, huh?
Yeah.
I thought of it before he said erectile dysfunctions, and I didn't want to think of anything else. So. Megan Thee Stallion and Florence Pugh are both tasked with going into a jungle to find pandas because they hold the secret to male pattern baldness because they're just so fuzzy and so cute. but ultimately they end up creating a super panda genetically, and it just terrorizes everything. Basically, it's Deep Blue Sea.
In a jungle.
Right.
But in a jungle with panda bears.
What's the 3-word title? Here we go. Can I help you with this one?
Please do.
All right. WAP. Wet ass pandas.
I love it.
Good title.
Please,
good title.
Thank God. I was just like, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God. Okay, where do I go with this one now? Fuck.
Let's hear yours.
Jesus, no. Okay.
You had time to think about this.
You wrote the question.
Okay, I think I have. Because okay, wait, hold on. All right, rapper, Charlemagne the God.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
He gets a dog from this very Gremlins-like figure.
Okay, yes, love it.
Yeah.
I follow.
And he gets this dog, and so what happens is him and his boy, the lead actor is Andrew Schultz. So they have their
don't they have a podcast together?
They do, that's exactly what I'm doing. Yeah, they have their podcast together, and he gets this dog for his kid, and Charlemagne notices that this dog is getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and it's getting hornier and hornier and hornier, because...
Oh, no!
The person that gave it to it wasn't, like, this weird shaman at all. It was actually a scientist, and he's also trying to cure erectile dysfunction. And they know that dogs are the horniest animals out there, and they don't lose steam when they're older. They keep fucking till late. So, but there's not enough dog hormone in any size dog, really, to get an experimental dose. So they get this dog, and what ends up happening, though, as it keeps growing, it also gets more red. so it gets really fucking red and really fucking pink and really fucking horny. It's up to Charlemagne the God and Andrew Schultz to team up comically to stop this horny dog from fucking all of New York City. And it's the three-word title is Big Red Dog.
Wow. I'm just flabbergasted right now.
I'm speechless, which is a rare thing to do.
Wow.
Big Red Dog, what? That's not been done before.
I don't even know where to begin, dude.
Let's just not.
Oh, that was fun.
Was it?
Like, it's like your movie's like a horny Clifford.
Yes, that's exactly the point.
I just destroyed my childhood in a single bound.
Yeah, so we both tried to fix dick pill problems though, Phil. So there we go.
Yeah, I came up with mine first. you had time.
I know. I try not to think about the questions when I write it. I'm just like, that's funny. Good. Just move past it.
See, you're good on his soul. Whenever I write a script, I'll be like, I'm already writing shit down for my answer.
That's funny. Okay. So, with that, with our weird... This is a fun, weird-ass episode. Okay. What would you each rate Deep Blue Sea out of 5 submerged Skarsgårds?
I'm going to go ahead and just give it a 3. It's fun. It's fine.
Oh, damn. I'm surprisingly going to go a little lower than you, Webster. I was going to say 2.5.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's right down the middle. Okay, I see.
Yeah, it's fun. Like, I didn't outright hate it. I just thought it was silly, and, like, it wasn't for me. It's not me. Yeah. Like, it's just not my kind of movie.
No, that makes total sense. I am going to give it... Again, I'm a fucking nostalgia whore, but even I can understand it's not the best movie. So I would give it a 3.3. 3.3. 2 3s.
Okay.
Yeah. To me, that's the right rating. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of fun.
It feels right.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I think people have a lot of big attachments to it. I am one of them. Mm-hmm. But also, at the end of the day, it is about genetically enhanced sharks murdering a bunch of
becoming actors. Yeah, becoming, like, self-aware. And it just... Because they have super large brains. They got big brain shit going on.
Yeah,
that does make you want to rate it higher, honestly. But now we're fine.
No.
3.3. All right, you got that out of me. So, yeah, we did it.
That's good.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for joining us. That was Deep Blue Sea from 1999. That was our first entry for Monster May. Next week, we are talking about... a movie that I also have never seen, but Phil adores, so I'm very excited to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. I totally forgot the movie. What is this movie? I'm gonna find it right now. Don't worry. Don't say it. Oh fuck yeah! That's an amazing movie. Damn. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, I can't wait. Sorry.
Me neither.
So it'll be a good one. And I'm excited for that, so please stay tuned. I don't have any hints. Phil, if you would like to give a hint.
Jesus. We don't have... No, that's an easy... No, you know what? No hints. Because any hint that I say, it's an easy giveaway.
Oh, okay. That's fine. I just wasn't sure because I basically just being like, it's a movie... Check it out. Like, isn't my usual bag, but...
What Jeffrey Epstein was, but should have killed him.
Damn. Oh, my God. That's good. You can't get better than that. That's good. Yeah, that's
hell yeah. Love that. So that's next week. Stay tuned for that. If you like what you heard this week on our absolutely unhinged episode on Deep Blue Sea, please make sure you are subscribed wherever you get your podcasts. And make sure, if you haven't already, if you could take a second and just leave us a review or a rating on Spotify or iTunes. It helps a ton and it helps other people find the podcast. And you guys are so, so awesome for doing it. And we appreciate every single one of those reviews. It really does mean the absolute world to us. And then if you want to stay up to date on the latest and greatest on all of our podcast shenanigans, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are on Facebook and Twitter at Horror People Pod, and we are on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORROR BLE People's Podcast. And you can find Anthony on Twitter and Instagram at Hyrulean Hustler. And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop. And you can find Phil on Instagram and YouTube at Phil Acevedo. As a helicopter flies over. Perfect timing.
Picking up everybody from the weekend shift right there. See?
I know, right? Right at the end. Okay. You know what? While we're waiting for the helicopter, how about this? Here's a hint for the next film. Manliest handshake of all time.
There you go. There you go.
And if you want to find other podcasts just like this one, just friends hanging out and doing their cool hobbies, the Horrible Peoples podcast is a podcast under the Horrible Peoples Network, and you can find other podcasts just like this one at Horrible Peoples Network on Instagram. That is HORROR BLE Peoples Network. We got music, we got video games, we got Dungeons and Dragons, we got horror movies, we got all of your bases covered. What more could you possibly want? With more coming.
Yep.
So stay tuned on that as well. So with that, I think that's it for this week. Anything else from you guys?
You killed my bird.
You killed my bird.
My hat's like a shark fin.
And there you go. See.
On that note, coffee's
so bad.
On that note, let's leave it off there. You know, stay out of the ocean, guys. Just don't, you know, just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Even if it's going to cure Alzheimer's. Peace.
Yeah. Bye.